with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The 23rd day of July, 2015. This is The Horn. Head On RadioNetwork.com is our home. I'm feeling considerably better than I was yesterday evening. And I had gotten my blood sugar to start rising again by the end of the first hour of the program. But the problem with a hypoglycemic attack is that anybody who's ever had them can tell you that you're left feeling kind of craptastic for a good while after. And you just, then it just wasn't there. I mean, it just wasn't there. So that's why the bailout last night, and I thank you for your kind consideration. And thanks also to Harold, who helped with fundraising last night. This program is live. I already said that, Marty. It is the 23rd day of July, 2015. Dang it, you got to pay attention. And we'll more than likely, I don't see why not, barring a suddenly arising thunderstorm, or I don't know, the occasional hillbilly Balrog that comes wandering down the highway, I don't see why we shouldn't get through an entire program this evening. Yay! But again, thanks going out to those who helped with the fundraising last night and who helped overnight. Thank you to Brenda. And again, thank you to Harold and Carol and Thomas. Thank you very much. And thank you. Thank you for being here and for sharing your precious finite time in participating in the program in whatever way that you do. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes, that part too. Jump on into the headonradionetwork.com chat room if you would like. That's where I'm going right now. Come on, there we are. Yeah. Good evening. Good evening to Anatole and a jug of punch and Texas tea, all capably moderated by Lottie and Sparky, who has, being a third stage guild navigator, folded space to become man cave this evening. Yes, both of them, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators. Don't cross them. No, it would be great if you wanted to jump in and help out with keeping things going. We are in a hole. Some of that, you know, I dug a few shovelfuls of earth last night by bailing out 2 hours early, and I acknowledge that. But we are in a hole that is some $460 deep this evening. And we do mercifully have some help. Chris in Germany has put a $100 challenge on the table and will double the first $100 that come in. You put in five, Chris makes it 10. You put in 10, Chris makes it 20. You put in 20, Chris makes it 40. All the way up to you put in 100, Chris makes it 2. Up to the first $100 that come in, and that will take off almost half. That'll get us almost halfway out of the hole, which will be a substantial help. Let's see. I'm trying to think. Between now and the 31st of July, $1,300 worth of bills. And that's, that's what it is. So it is, by the way, thorn in the side Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that we're going to probably spend the next couple of hours going, oh, daggone, ow, ooh. And just gauging by what I've seen on the interweb tubes through the early part, well, the previous foregoing part of the day, there's a, we got a rose bush by the branches, and no spider-proof gloves, or for that matter, brush buster gloves, for that matter. No. Of course, we can talk politics. The Donald. And, you know, I feel nasty. I feel like I'm giving this evil, vile, filthy, nasty manipulator of other people's well-being. I feel like I'm giving him something for free by even talking about him. But God, how are those adjectives that I used with regard to Donald Trump, how are they not applicable to Scott Walker? How are they not applicable to Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz? How are they not applicable to Rand Paul and that thing on his head? How are they not applicable to Rick Perry? How are they not applicable to Lindsey Graham? Even though it was just darling watching him all get all butch and going to war with that cell phone on that video, wasn't it? Oh, my. I mean, he hit it with a stick. I imagine he probably had to go to the veranda for a little bit of refreshment after all of that vigorous, manly activity. But really, and I think that's my thesis with regard to Donald Trump. All he is the Republican Party writ large. He is the Republican Party with its ego run up to 11. Did I say ego? I think I meant id. He has no filter, and so he just says stuff. And I guess among some people that plays as refreshingly honest. With me, it just plays as, look, he really is a Republican. And now, and I find this absolutely hilarious, now he is threatening to mount an independent campaign should the Republican Party not be sufficiently obsequious to him. In other words, Lindsey has to quit calling him a jackass, and Rick Perry, who's put on his smart glasses specifically for the occasion, has to stop calling him cancer. And everybody just has to, you know, a little nod, maybe not a full on bow to his wealthiness, but, you know, just a little nod, maybe a little air kiss toward the ring, if not an outright finger sucking ring kiss. He says exactly what the Republican Party stands for. That's why he enjoys the polling lead that he does. The Republican Party, per se, in this country, is nothing but a cranky old gang of disaffected, racist white people. That's all the base is. That's why they get off on it when he talks about Mexicans being rapists. It's what they think. It's at the core of their being. It's all they got left. It's what Barry Goldwater and Dwight Eisenhower both predicted for the Republican Party. Neither of them were prophets, but they were, in their own rights, masterful politicians, and they saw the ugly direction their party was taking and where it was going to go. So when Donald Trump says something over the top, understand this much. Whatever it is he says, there's another Republican presidential candidate out there saying, I wish I could say something like that and get away with it. And all I can say to the prospect of an independent presidential candidacy on the part of Donald Trump is run. Run, Donald. Run. But it's true, the man's entire existence is nothing but exploitation. From the exploitation of women in his Miss Universe pageant, to the exploitation of people in his gambling hells, to his crappy real estate, his crummy bedding, his stupid neckties. It's all just exploitation. Because, see, Donald Trump is nothing but a 200-proof capitalist. And that means his stock in trade is exploitation. That's how it works. I mean, but to be fair, who has harmed more people? Donald Trump or Scott Walker? That's not a rhetorical question. I would submit that the easy answer to that is Scott Walker. Because he has taken a state with a proud progressive tradition and tried over the course of the last 8 years to turn it into a dung heap. One of the most brilliant state university systems in the country, a system that any state would be proud of. And he's trying to dismantle it as quickly as he can because he despises the idea that motivates it. The Wisconsin idea. As previously noted, $250 million gone from the University of Wisconsin budget. When the University of Wisconsin system budget probably didn't have $250 million of fat in it. And at the same time, approval of a new basketball arena for Milwaukee. Yay, Bucks. And study after, and of course, it's the same old excuse. Well, if we build that basketball arena, it will be great for downtown economic development. Ooh. But study after study after study says that's hogwash. That it's something wished for, but seldom accomplished. So today, Trump went to Old Mexico. Well, no, he didn't. He went to Laredo. When I walked out on the streets of Laredo, when I walked out in Laredo one day, I spied a young cowboy. No. Hell, my knowledge of things Texan is, as most Texans know, significantly limited. But there's a cool 200,000 people in the city of Laredo, Texas. And I doubt if there's any cowboys all wrapped in white linen and cold as the clay. That's more Sandra Bland. Then there's that to talk. The best dissection of the Sandra ongoing, the ongoing nightmare that is the Sandra Bland story is Charles Blow's column today in the New York Times, who actually fills space on the op-ed pages with something fun. Honest to God. If Charles Blow scrapes the gunk out from under his fingernails and spreads it across a piece of paper, it has more meaning than anything that David Brooks may ever write. But his analysis of the myriad questions surrounding the Sandra Bland case was just very neatly put it all in one place where you could go, "What in the sweet name of is going on down there?" But Donald went to Laredo at what he claimed was great personal danger to himself to go and look at the border to show how heroic he is, because El Chapo is not going to keep him away from the Rio Grande. Twenty or so protesters from the League of United Latin American Citizens, LULAC, showed up to try to make Trump a little less welcome. They shouted at him in Spanish. Okay, good. I mean, really good. But, of course, the Donald doesn't speak Spanish. He barely speaks English. Makes one wonders what is being taught in those high-toned institutions of higher learning. Didn't he go to Wharton or something like that? And, of course, on top of it all, the National Border Patrol Council Local 2455, which had originally invited him there, at the last minute pulled out and said, "No, we're not gonna." And, of course, Trump's people said, "Well, this is because they had their arms twisted from their national organization. They're really angry that they can't be there with Donald." In fact, the Trump called their superiors from Washington. As the New York Times reports, he vowed to continue to visit the town despite the great danger. "I may never see you again," he said on Fox, "but we're going to do it." Jesus, you'd have thought he was about to lead Pickett's charge. But then again, I like to look for the silver linings. You know who wins in a fight between El Chapo and Donald Trump? Everybody! Takes a really low-down, shitty human being to make you root for an on-the-lam, murderous drug cartel leader, doesn't it? I mean, I'm not saying El Chapo's right, but I ain't saying he's wrong, neither, if you know what I mean. Meanwhile, just in case anybody's wanting to actually know real, true facts, Laredo, Texas is, with its population comprising above the 90th percentile Latino people. One of the safest cities in Texas. It's also one of the bluest. Yeah, that's what it was. Thank you. In the chat room, Sparky. The Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. Right. The Wharton is the business school. What did they give? Tell me he didn't get an MBA, you know, more bigger asshole. Although I think you could give one to him just on the strength of character alone, or weakness, as the case may be. Oh, I love the way you guys think. Note coming in from Steve in New York. Pickett's charge. If only. Jack in Shreveport pointing out with regard to Wisconsin, you know, the right wing especially wants to crush the Madison campus. They do a lot of protesting. Madison is a wonderful and lovely place. In regard, I presume, to the Sandra Bland story, Randy in PA says, this is a case of a story that has legs. Keep the pressure on, but I wish the press wouldn't speculate about what we don't know yet. And the problem is, it's not just what we don't know, it's what we may never know. And now, of course, the obligatory slandering of Sandra Bland has come along. I'm sure you've seen that today. The dead Negro woman apparently smoked copious amounts and consumed copious amounts of the marijuanas while in her jail cell. Oh, please. Meanwhile, back in Laredo, State Senator Judith Zaffarini, who is a Democrat, said, while many might be happy never to see Trump again, no one wishes him ill, and no one I know considers him threatened physically in any way. That was the way you put it nicely. On the other hand, one of the protesters there said, I've never heard something more ridiculous in my entire life. And that was just the mention of Donald Trump. Despite the great danger in which I place for myself this day, because my love for this country is huge, like my welt. So, you know, Donald Trump is just a giant watch this space sign. And there's some delightful speculation out there. Can he sustain this level for 15 months of a grueling presidential campaign? Oh, please, shut up! Go and change your armor! Of course he can. All he has to do is walk to the microphone and say something stupid. You know why? Because, as we have lately been taught, that way lies the presidency. Walking to the microphone and saying something stupid worked out pretty well in 2000, didn't it? And hey, you got the rats and the Kennedy kid there. So, well, you could do another Bush versus Gore if it's nice and tight. The election results. Oh, and by the way, Trump wants to revisit the building of the Great Wall of China, and I guess they don't have any history courses there in your Wharton School of Business at Penn, because we all know the lesson of the Great Wall of China. You build the Great Wall of China, you say, ha, we've got a great wall here, and then the barbarian hordes outside the wall just bribe the gatekeeper for the key. But no, he's going to build a Great Wall of America all across four states. you know, California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. And he's going to make Mexico pay for it. Because he's Trump. Then, you know, he'll just tell Mexico, and Mexico will say, yeah, well, I mean, you know, you're the one that wrote that out of the deal book, so I guess we got to build the wall, pay for it for you, and everything. He's not going away anytime soon. Because he is the naked id of the Republican Party. Now, there's a little caveat that comes with this. As is always the case with people of his ilk, he's got a couple of policy positions out there that are designed to sucker in the occasional, oh, I don't know, progressive from the fluffy bunny wing of the party, because, well, by golly, he's for universal single-payer health care. Doesn't that make you feel all better now? I mean, yeah. He's got the temperament of a pissed off weasel, and the pissed off weasel may actually reside on his head. But he's for single-payer health care. I'm a real progressive, not one of those phony lesser of two evils progressives. I'd vote for Trump in a minute over that Hillary. Ooh, Hillary! Ooh, ooh, ah, fascist! Ooh, ah. Long way to November 2016. And short of, I don't know, I mean, are they going to have a treehouse meeting, the Republican presidential contenders, and just drum Trump out? Because he would mount an independent presidential campaign, and that means that the Republicans would be out of the White House for what, 12 continuous years? Mm-hmm. It could be fun. The best commentary, why am I surprised? The best commentary on the Trump candidacy actually comes from The Onion. Writing in the guise of Donald Trump, and who knows, maybe he really did write it. The latest polls are out, and just as I predicted, I'm leading the Republican presidential race by a wide margin. You might be wondering how that could be. After all, it's hardly been a month since I entered the field, and I've already alienated America's largest immigrant population, seen dozens of my high-profile business deals implode one after the other, and publicly insulted a national hero's military service, all while not offering a single viable policy idea. But none of that matters at all, and my candidacy continues to surge forward because none of you, not a single one of you, can look away, not even for a second. Admit it. You people want to see just how far this goes, don't you? My campaign's just barely begun, and I've already got you begging for more. Sure, you can say you oppose me or that you don't even take me seriously, but let me ask you, how many articles have you read about Ted Cruz lately, huh? How many news segments have you watched on Bobby Jindal or Rand Paul? But if those stories have the name Donald Trump in them, well, look who suddenly can't get enough. The thing is, oh, don't, no, 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 Texas Betsy says love you, but you seriously need to work on your Trump accent. No, I wouldn't devote the time it would take to do a halfway decent Trump. This is just a garden variety mook. Because that's all he is. You take away his money, he's just a schlub. A schlemiel. A schmuck. A jackass, as Lindsay so ably put it. The thing is, I got all of you eating out of my hand, and I haven't even released a single campaign commercial yet. Don't look me in the eye and tell me you don't want to stick around and see what that looks like, because you and I both know these ads are going to be absolutely incredible. I'll be standing there projecting my best presidential air, saying I'm Donald Trump and I approve this message, and you won't be able to take your eyes off it. You keep obsessing over every little thing I do and say, and I promise you'll get your commercials real soon. And the TV spots are just the beginning. I know you, and I know what you like. You'll absolutely eat it up when you see the Trump 16 t-shirts, the lawn signs, the bumper stickers. In fact, you'll probably get a real kick out of pointing them out to your friends. Now, just imagine me shaking hands with senior citizens at a nursing home in Iowa. Wouldn't you love to watch that? Or hear what comes out of my mouth when I speak to blue-collar workers at a struggling auto factory, huh? You say that doesn't interest you? All right, because you're dying to see how Scott Walker behaves in those situations, right? Give me a break. Just take a moment and imagine the primary debates. Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, me. Of course, they'll put me in the middle because I'm ahead in the polls. Far ahead at the moment. You already know how I answer even the most basic inquiry, so just picture me staring down the barrel of a question about foreign affairs or agriculture policy or something like that. You think you won't sit there with the bated breath while I try to tackle a question about using military force, about food stamps, or about how my faith influences my decision-making? I guarantee you that my answers will be worth watching. And we both know you wouldn't miss them for the world. It'd be the biggest, most watched primary debate in history, courtesy of all of you. And I might remind you that the longer this goes on, the closer I get to selecting a running mate. That realization kind of delighted you in a way, didn't it? Huh? You absolutely want to know who I'd pick. A defeated GOP challenger who hates my guts? Another lunatic billionaire? Maybe my own son, Donald Trump Jr. Whatever your wildest expectation is, I promise you I will surpass it. You're not going to pass up an opportunity to see that, are you? I can tell you're practically salivating right now, and I'm going to keep riding this fascination, this little fixation you have with me, as far as you'll take me. You know I will. So don't try to tell me you'd be just as happy to watch one of those other bozos go toe-to-toe with Hillary Clinton or give a soaring speech at the national convention. And don't delude yourself into thinking it's everyone else who wants to watch me do this, and you're somehow above it. You want to see it. You want more. You hear Trump and your attention snaps to the TV screen right away. Don't think it's true? Fine. You know what you have to do to make me go away? Just quit paying attention. Stop reading this right now. That's right, I didn't think so. I have the power to make the next 16 months one of the most incredible times in our nation's history, and not a single one of you can say you're not at least a little bit curious to see how this wild ride shakes out. So just keep clicking every link that mentions my name and hitting play on every clip of my public appearances, and I promise you will not be disappointed. Now, excuse me, but I have to go to appear at a New Hampshire town hall and make a statement that every last one of you will be eagerly reading about and discussing in just a few hours' time. Oh, my goodness. Our friends at The Onion are playing over in reality land, aren't they? I mean, they're cutting it pretty close to the grain between reality and satire, aren't they? Because that was all true. Absolutely, undeniably, unmitigatedly true. And it creates a conundrum. Do you just not talk about it? Or do we manifest some sort of appreciation for it insofar as, like I said, he's just being the Republican that we know Republicans are? I don't know. by the way, if you're out and about and you need to do some shopping and you're going to a strip mall and that strip mall has a military recruiting center in it, just be extra careful. Oh, not because the ISIS is going to come and get them. Now, stop that. You're not that silly. You're not silly at all. But no, because America's freedom protectors, with their Second Amendment rights, America, have decided to take it upon themselves to defend our poor, defenseless military recruiting centers. Because that Obama, that one, the Kenyan Muslim usurper in our White House, has deliberately left our military, our brave, heroic military recruiters, unarmed and unprotected against the Muslim terrorists. And that's why your freedom-protecting defenders of freedom and liberty have had to take up their own Second Amendment remedies to go and guard our military recruiting centers. And that is why I am advising you to be extra careful if you're in a strip mall that has a recruiting center in it. Because idiots. I saw a story that, lo and behold, yes indeedy, down in Princeton, West Virginia, which I'm sure is on any number of lists of places that ISIL, I can't wait to get at. Well, they've got some freedom protectors from an ultra-right-wing militia paramilitary weirdo gang down there trying to guard the Marines. Because, of course, they could never get in their own right. And it's a national thing. All over the place, people are taking their open carry freedom protectors to their military recruiting station and guarding. Isn't it interesting that none of the freedom protectors have taken their Second Amendment remedy protectors of freedom and started guarding black churches? Well, maybe it's because they're in the same organizations that Dylann Roof was, huh? What? Yeah, oh. And how, you ask, do I tell a good guy with a gun from a bad guy with a gun? And the answer is, you wait until he starts shooting. And depending on what he's shooting at, you can determine whether he's a good guy with a gun or a bad guy with a gun. It's kind of like the difference between a lawful gun owner and an awful gun owner. A lawful gun owner is a guy with a gun, usually white and male and under 40. An awful gun owner is the same person who begins shooting. And your decision-making time is exactly as long as it takes your lawful gun owner to squeeze the trigger and become an awful gun owner. Dateline, Lancaster, Ohio. Today, this here very afternoon. This very afternoon, 28-year-old freedom protector Christopher A. Reed accidentally squeezed off a round from his Second Amendment AR-15 assault rifle when somebody walked up to him and, I kid you not, said, "Hey, can I see your rifle?" And so 28-year-old Christopher A. Reed was pointing the weapon down at the ground, well, actually the concrete, and he went to clear, because it was loaded, locked, and ready to rock and roll, and went to expel the round from the chamber, because you never know when you're going to have to get busy with the with your freedom protecting. And, yeah, he fired the weapon out into the concrete. The Columbus Dispatch says the only damage was a hole in the pavement. Law enforcement arrived on the scene and, oddly enough, didn't kill him. You know, he's white. But they did charge him with the misdemeanor of discharging a firearm within city limits. The Columbus Dispatch actually reached 28-year-old freedom protector Christopher A. Reed by phone, and he said, "I'm nobody special. I'm just a guy doing my job because my own government wouldn't do it, because service personnel aren't allowed to carry guns at recruiting centers. Hoo-ah." So he's just doing his job because the government wouldn't do it. And that job is apparently shooting up the pavement. Genius. So, yeah, as and that is kind of interesting. Jack notes, hey, aren't stores, malls, and their parking lots private property? Would that affect open carry? Well, it would if you had the nerve to tell them not to open carry, but then a bunch of the pissed-off babies would show up with more guns to try to intimidate you into saying, please, come and shoot up our concrete some more. See how it works? Charming, isn't it? And there's not a damn thing you get. But interestingly, the... Oh, great, there's a wasp in here. I'll leave him alone if he leaves me alone. Or her. I don't know if it works with wasps the same way it does with bees. Yeah, you know, don't be too mad at Mr. Reed down there in over there in Lancaster, Ohio. That concrete may have had it coming. It may have looked Muslim. But the interestingly, the Department of Justice. They're not Department of Justice, the Department of Defense, and particularly the Army, has issued a directive to its recruiting stations. Mm-hmm. The Army has informed its recruiters to regard all armed civilians as a potential security threat. That story coming from Stars and Stripes.
Be your own chief cloud officer.
I hate it when audio starts automatically. Stop it. In response to the oodles of freedom protectors, simply identified as civilians, who have decided to take up positions outside the recruiting centers in the name of protecting them. The Army says that no, all armed civilians pose a potential threat. Let's see, Georgia, Wisconsin, Tennessee, Idaho, West Virginia, Ohio. And they say that if they can manage not to shoot the concrete, they're going to gun down anybody who attacks. A letter from Army Command Operations Center Security Division said, I'm sure the citizens mean well, but we cannot assume this in every case, and we do not want to advocate this behavior. If questioned by these alleged concerned citizens, nice using the alleged there, be polite, professional, and terminate the conversation immediately and report the incident to local law enforcement. Military members are informed that when they call the cops, they are to let the cops know that the civilians may be armed and in possession of a concealed carry permit. Well, just the same, the Oath Keepers are out there, and they say they're not going away. Of course not. One Oath Keeper, Stuart Rhodes, said, "They're sitting ducks. They'd be better off if they were walking down the streets of Baghdad, because at least in Baghdad they could move. Here, they're stationary." Really? They can't move at all? No, he did. Meanwhile, down in Savannah, Georgia, the folks who worked the recruiting center there were a little bit surprised to show up to work, finding a guy they didn't recognize standing outside the recruiting center with a rifle and a handgun. Reached out to by WFLA, an unnamed source said, "You know, there's always some concern about safety for our soldiers and civilians when someone's walking around with weapons." The Marine Corps has gotten in on the act. They said, "It has come to our attention that many patriotic citizens have been standing armed guard outside recruiting stations across the country. Hoo-ah! While we greatly appreciate the support of the American public during this tragedy, we ask that citizens do not stand guard at our recruiting offices. Our continued public trust lies among our trained first responders for the safety of the communities where we live and work." Hoyta Concrete, Morgan Develd, right? Sure. So, there's that. On the other hand, there remains the little issue of ISIL. And in a way, the conclusions reached in this article remind me of the same thing that deals with, it's reminiscent, you could say sort of the same thing about Donald Trump. Huh? Yeah, work with me. The article was in the New York Times a couple of days ago, ISIS transforming into functioning state that uses terror as tool. It is accompanied by a photograph of an ISIS person handing a soccer ball to a little boy at a public event somewhere in Syria. And it talks about the fact that ISIL is transforming itself slowly but surely into a governing body. Tim Arango writing, "Increasingly, as it holds the territory and builds a capacity to govern, the group is transforming into a functioning state that uses extreme violence, terror, as a tool. That distinction is proving to be more than a matter of perspective for those who live under the Islamic State, which has provided relative stability in a region troubled by war and chaos while filling a vacuum left by failing and corrupt governments that also employed violence, arrest, torture, and detention. In other words, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. While no one is predicting, Tim Arango continues, that the Islamic State will become the steward of an accountable functioning state anytime soon, the group is putting in place the kinds of measures associated with governing, issuing identification cards for residents, promulgating fishing guidelines to preserve stocks, requiring that cars carry tool kits for emergencies. That transition may demand that the West rethink its military-first approach to combating the group. And the story then quotes Stephen M. Walt, a professor of international affairs at the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. I think that there is no question that the way to look at it is as a revolutionary state-building organization. And apparently, while a minority line of thought, it's a line of thought that's gaining some regard. He wrote an article recently, Mr. Walt, called "What Should We Do If the Islamic State Wins?" Saying an Islamic State victory would mean that the group retained power in the areas it now controls and successfully defied outside efforts to degrade and destroy it. And the article goes on to point out why this is, the fact that Sunnis hate Shia, Shia hates Sunni, Shias are controlling the Iraqi central government, Sunnis are, for all intents and purposes, disenfranchised. An antique shop owner in Raqqa, Syria, identified only as Ahmed, said, honestly, both are dirty, the regime and Daesh, Daesh being another word for ISIS, ISIL. But the Islamic State is more acceptable here in Raqqa. He said he had also lived under the Free Syrian Army. Those are Lindsey Graham and John McCain's pals, you might recall. Ahmed said of the Free Syrian Army, they're like the regime, they're thieves. And let's understand that the people there operate a cultural paradigm that is miles away from anything we even remotely are able to comprehend. Under the Islamic State, he said, here they are implementing God's regulations. The killer is killed, the adulterer is stoned, the thief's hands are cut. And Mr. Arango goes on to note that, well, this smells a little bit like the Taliban now, doesn't it? Saying while the Taliban were feared and their justice was brutal, they were respected by many Afghans for standing against corruption and chaos, and they remained firmly in control until the American invasion in 2001. You might recall that in early 2001, the Bush administration told the Taliban, you can have a carpet of gold or a carpet of bombs. This was, of course, before September 11th ever happened. And, in fact, we had given them some of that carpet of gold, because we really appreciated the fact that the Taliban cracked down, and it really has a different, more profound meaning when people like the Taliban are doing it, on the farming of opium. And then we started our little war in Afghanistan, which even though it's a relatively tiny country, we somehow can't seem to win. Still. And lo and behold, heroin production went right back through the roof. And it's become so ubiquitous that, you know, if I wanted to and I asked around a little bit, I could probably buy it right here where I live in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cole, Virginia. And that's a new one. That is a new one. You can buy it down in Mingo County in Williamson. You can buy it in McDowell County in Welch. You can buy it in Pineville. Damn sure buy it in Beckley. Yeah. funny how Alexander the Great's forces marched in there, took it, couldn't hold it. The British and the Russians in the 19th century played the great game over Afghanistan, couldn't hold it. Russians tried for 20 years, couldn't hold it in the 20th century. And, well, we're working on 20 years, and we can't either. Former CIA Deputy Director John McLaughlin has come to the conclusion. He said, it suddenly just occurred to me, if you add everything up, that these guys could win. And he said, it's a controversial notion because the groups, because they're such hateful, vicious monsters. But John McLaughlin said, you know, evil isn't always defeated. And that's the part that reminded me of Donald Trump. Everybody just assumes that Trump will dry up and blow away, that he'll get tired of it, but he won't because he craves attention. He's like the Star Trek salt monster lady and it just puts her finger in it, sucks all the salt out of your system and leaves this little dried up husk with little red hickeys all over their faces. That's Donald Trump. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening, too. I think you get my meaning. Evil doesn't always lose. And the funny thing about... there's nothing funny about it. The funny thing about the ISIS, ISIL, Daesh controversy is that it's not without a solution. There is a way there's a way to do this. You march your happy ass in with a couple of million people, and you bomb and you blast and you kill. Granted, they don't have snappy uniforms or anything, but they got tanks. I saw some ISIL people driving tanks. Where the hell did they get tanks? Wait, those were our tanks! And you whip the entire region. And you tell everybody, all the other players, if you don't participate, you're next. Now don't get me wrong. I'm not saying... Because how to do it is different than whether you should do it. I say we should not do that. But let's remember that there are a whole bunch of clowns running for the Republican presidential nomination who would like to. They think that Obama's a big old wuss. What Marco Rubio say? He doesn't have any class. He said that Donald Trump doesn't have any class and that we don't need another president with no class like the classless president we have now. Nice guy, that Rubio. But ISIS, ISIL, Daesh could be dealt with, but it would be a brutal, bloody, utterly inhumane slaughter, because you pretty much got to go in and kill everything that moves. From the scorpions all the way to the old gray-headed grandfathers, gray-bearded grandfathers. Got to get all Henry V on their ass and threaten to bash their babies' heads against the city walls. You got to get imperial. And you're probably going to have to institute some way of cranking up a couple of million, getting a couple of million troops over there to do it. and still be able to guard our other interests around the world, which means you would have to go, you know, full-on military state. And you'd probably have to convince the American people that it would be worth their sons and daughters dying just to pacify a region that really, when you get right down to it, doesn't have much value. I mean, except for the oil. Ron and Raleigh noting, subject line, maybe. Hey, Bob, maybe our staunch ally could fight them. No. We do their fighting for them. They don't fight for us. Besides, they've gotten to where they're not much good at killing anything but babies. Now, you want to launch a missile into a crib? Yeah, you got somebody you can do that for you for. That country would not raise a finger to help the United States in the region, and we both know it. But whether it's ISIS or whether it's Donald Trump, evil isn't always defeated. Bless his heart, though. John McLaughlin, cited in the article, deputy director of the CIA from 2000 to 2004, so that means he was a loyal Bushy. He actually knows him some history. And he understands, and Mr. Walt understand ISIS in an entirely different light. Mr. Walt, reporter Arango notes, mentioned the guillotine of the French Revolution and the atrocities of the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia and the Communist Revolution in China, not to mention the Great Leap Forward. Imperfect analogies, to be sure, but ones that underscored the violence and oppression that can precede creation of a revolutionary state. He said, at the time, these movements were regarded as completely beyond the pale and a threat to international order. And then there's Mr. McLaughlin, who pointed to Hezbollah, which is now a legitimate political player, but was early, a terrorist. And then he said, hey, while we're at it, let's look at the English royalty. If you look at what the English kings did to consolidate their territories in the 14th and 15th centuries, they were not only beheading people, but disemboweling them. Yeah, we did kind of, we wrote the book, white people. William McCant said, we in the West have bought into this idea that insurgency and counterinsurgency is a battle for hearts and minds. We forget how many states have been established through brutality. All of them! So, just bear in mind, there's a solution to ISIL, but you don't want it. Regarding Trump, Jim says, an unusual man with ad hominem appeal with an unusual solution to be taken seriously. Indeed. Four minutes past the hour, and a gentle reminder out there, there is a $100 challenge courtesy of Chris in Germany. The first $100 coming in will get matched, and that'll knock, and the matching plus the $100 will knock $200 off of our $460 hole for the evening. It'd be very helpful. The PayPal button is under the tab Contribute at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Of course, the mailing address for checks and money orders made out to The Horn is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And if you want to work that way, let me know, and I'll tell Boss Man Wayne to that he doesn't have to be quite so careful as he sticks his spider-proof gloved hand into the echo chamber. Yeah, you know, and that's true regarding ISIL, our partners in peace. The good headloppers, the Saudis, they don't seem to be too concerned. They're more concerned about bombing the snot out of Sana'a, Yemen. And as Devin points out, if the Saudis deployed their forces to fight ISIL, they'd all defect to ISIL. Because remember, as brutal as ISIL is, it's no worse than Wahhabis. All right, then. Here endeth the filibobster. You are welcome to participate in the conversation, and in fact, encouraged so to do. The lines are open, 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178 is one number. The other, the stress line, named for our dear friend Bill, Mr. Stress Miller. The stress line is 304-663-4676, and it's ready for you, too. Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn, on Skype. Knock yourself out. I welcome the conversation. This is Conversation Radio. That's why I welcome it. This is the horn. And, yeah, this seems appropriate.
Roland was a warrior from the land of the midnight sun, with a Thompson gun for hire, fight and to be done. The deal was made in Denmark on a dark and stormy day, so he set out for Biafra to join the bloody fray. From 66 and 7 they fought the Congo War with their fingers on their triggers, knee-deep in gore. Days and nights they battled the Bantu to their knees. They killed to earn their living and to help out the Congolese. Roland the Thompson gunner, Roland the Thompson gunner. His comrades fought beside him, Van Owen and the rest, but of all the Thompson gunners, Roland was the best. So the CIA decided they wanted Roland dead. That son of a bitch, Van Owen, blew off Roland's head. Roland, the headlights, Thompson. Headlights body stalking through the night in the muzzle flash of Roland's Thompson gun. In the muzzle flash of Roland's Thompson gun. Roland searched the continent for the man who'd done him in. He found him in Mombasa, in a barroom drinking gin. Roland aimed his Thompson gun, he didn't say a word, but he blew Van Owen's body from there to Johannesburg. Roland the headless Thompson gunner, Roland the headless Thompson gunner. Headless Thompson gunner, talking about the man. Rolling the headless Thompson gunner. The eternal Thompson gunner, still wandering through the night. Now it's 10 years later, but he still keeps up the fight. In Ireland, in Lebanon, in Palestine, in Berkeley, Eddie Hurst heard the birth of Roland Thompson gun and body.
It's
Thursday, July 23, 2015.
I'm still not sure of all the causes and all the science.
Ohio Governor John Kasich jumps into the 2016 race. We'll try to decipher his position on climate change.
One of the things that preceded the failure of the nation state of Syria, the rise of ISIS, was the effect of climate change.
The Democratic presidential candidate Martin O'Malley links global warming to Middle East unrest and ISIS.
If he is saying that, then my use of aerosol hairspray is as bad as beheadings.
And Fox News heads explode. Plus,
right in the middle of this problem, we have fierce opposition and blind inertia.
California Governor Jerry Brown slams climate science deniers.
All of those slams and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
Of course, we've got to be concerned about it, but we shouldn't worship the environment.
No, we should worship a great, big, huge, invisible, bearded, floating guy in the sky. Like you, Governor. That makes much more sense. Am I right? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I suspect you may be breathing a sigh of relief. We have maybe, just maybe, the final major presidential candidate to enter the race this week, which means your yeoman's job of tracking each of their climate change positions over these past many months is almost over.
There are probably a few more that are going to pop up anyway. They're like whack-a-mole.
All right, well, you just keep whacking. What do you have for us today?
Well, first, the 16th Republican has now jumped into the race for the 2016 Republican presidential nomination. Ohio Governor John Kasich announced his bid on Tuesday. Now, as we said, we've been tracking the climate change positions of all of the official 2016 candidates. And in an interview with the Financial Times just 2 weeks ago, Kasich said he believes climate change is happening, but he's not sure it's time to do anything about it.
We have an obligation to the environment. Of course, we've got to be concerned about it, but we shouldn't worship the environment. And I wouldn't want to create any kind of dramatic economic change of policy, because I'm still not sure, I don't know that anybody is fully sure, of all the causes and all the science.
Oh, man. All right, let's unpack that. First, nobody's worshiping the environment. What we're trying to say is, let's keep the planet alive. That's all it is. And the idea that, we may have to spend a lot of money to save ourselves, given that we have spent so much more money essentially killing ourselves over the past 50, 100 years. And yes, people do know who is responsible. It is man.
And in more recent history, in practice, as governor, Kasich rejected federal funding for high-speed rail and rolled back Ohio's wildly successful renewable electricity standard, which had saved Ohioans over $200 million and lowered their electricity rates.
So is it fair to say that John Kasich both pretends to not be a denier and pretends to be a denier?
All at the same time, it's quite a trick.
He's very good.
Right-wing media was in an uproar this week after Democratic presidential candidate and former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley linked historic mega drought in the Middle East to unrest in the region.
One of the things that preceded the failure of the nation state of Syria and the rise of ISIS was the effect of climate change and the mega drought that affected that region, wiped out farmers, drove people to cities, created a humanitarian crisis that created the conditions of extreme poverty that has led now to the rise of ISIL and this extreme violence.
Heads exploded in right-wing media land, figuratively, of course. Here's Fox News host Kennedy.
Oh, that's it. It's the mega drought. Finally, we know. I guess when you mix a rise in temperature with a lack of water, you get an Islamic caliphate.
Of course, don't tell Fox News, but the Pentagon calls global warming a threat multiplier, and multiple studies have found climate change worsened the 2011 drought in Syria and played a role in triggering Syria's civil war.
And we have covered that time and time again on the Green News Report, so I guess they just can't be bothered to do actual research over at Fox News.
Meanwhile, California Governor Jerry Brown blasted the climate change denial industry and their friends in politics and the media for obstructing action on climate change at a two-day climate summit at the Vatican in Rome this week.
We are talking about extinction. We're talking about climate regimes that have not been seen for tens of millions of years that requires that we react. Right in the middle of this problem, we have fierce opposition and blind inertia. And that opposition is well-financed.
And former California governor and action movie star Arnold Schwarzenegger also warned the conference, quote, "I've starred in a lot of science fiction movies, and let me tell you something, climate change is not science fiction."
And that's the guy who used to drive his Hummer around proudly as a denier. People can change. Only question is, will they do it before it's too late? For much more on that story and all of the others we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download the Green News Report anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Dear God, was that the Brady Bunch singing? What makes me think it was? You, come on, Brad, Desi, Jesus. 16 minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn, and still looking for matching, anybody who wants their money doubled. There's $100 worth of doubling money on the table this evening, courtesy of Chris in Germany. Thank you, Chris. Thank you very kindly. Let's go over to the Skype line and talk to Jim. Hey, Jim.
Good evening. How are you feeling?
Better, I guess. Those hypoglycemic plunges just kind of suck.
Yeah, they do. They can really take you on a roller coaster ride, that's for sure.
Well, you get desperate to get some sugar back into your body, and then you go and check your sugar. Oh, look, 212. Yeah, and that's no good either.
No, there doesn't seem to be any happy medium in a situation like that. That's for sure.
No, no contented palm readers.
No, no.
Happy medium. See?
I just happened to hear the name of Arnold mentioned. I'll never forget the first words he ever said. Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and listen to the lamentations of the women.
The lamentations of the women. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, going back to Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump, I watched him day before yesterday on CNN. It was a lengthy.
Can't help it, can you?
Oh, no. And, I didn't switch that channel off. I listened to him very carefully because men like him scare me. And I listen to what they say, and I believe what they are saying.
Because he's
sort of like a legend in his own mind. But what scares me?
Well, he's a diagnosable megalomaniac, Jim.
Well, exactly. And, you know, we've seen this happen in history before. And this guy was going on talking about this, that, and the other. You said this afternoon that he was going to go visit the Great Wall of China.
No. He went down to Laredo, Texas to holler that we need to build our own version of it.
Oh, well, he'll probably be over there trying to, maybe he's inspecting it, trying to tell people, well, how it should have worked. Who knows with him? Because, I mean, he just gets to the point that he's outrageous, yet he has enough plausibility in what he says to appeal to a lot of just plain ignorant people.
Otherwise known as the Republican base.
Well, and they say, well, you know, we don't care how he got his $8 billion or whatever his net worth is according to the SEC. I'm not sure. I heard it was eight. I've heard different figures. But,
it's huge.
You know, they say, well, you know, hey, if he can do that, there must be something to him.
Maybe. But I think in the final analysis, Jim, there's nothing left of the Republican base except this nasty, cancerous knot of hate and fear and resentment, and he represents that in its platonic ideal form for Emery and Marvelline sitting out in their matching Barca loungers in flyover country. You know, we live in flyover country, and you know, scared of the world, scared of the future, scared of the present, scared of the dark skins, scared of the. Scared of the immigrants, scared of the poor, scared.
Mm-hmm.
And of course,
right.
But of course, Trump says he's going to win the Latino vote because and in his words, I'll put him to work.
Oh, yeah. He'll put him to work, all right. But I think you had it pretty much on point when you said he represents the id of the Republican Party. You know?
Yeah,
the id.
It's just, it certainly ain't the superego.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, he's sort of like, I don't know, something out of the Krells on Forbidden Planet. We saw what happened to them in that movie. That's for damn sure. But that man is to be taken seriously. He's got the assets, and he's got a lot of backing in this country who would love to see him in the White House. I mean, he's wanted to do that for so long a time.
Well, I just want to see him in a third-party candidacy. That's my fondest wish.
Well, that would be a good thing to happen, and maybe that would be the best thing at all. But, I mean, like I say, initially, it's a long time away from 2016, November. But nonetheless, you know, he needs to be taken very seriously by everybody.
Have you noticed him, Jim, in those moments when he's got that particularly smug, self-satisfied smirk on his face? That kind of turns down at the corners of his mouth.
I
hate to go there, but I see that look, and you know who I think of immediately? If he would just cross his arms over his chest in front of him and do it, it would be spot on.
I think we're talking about the same gentleman, aren't we?
Yeah, the Italian fellow.
Well, they both had strange oratory. Content as well as physical gesticulations when they made speeches.
No, honest to God, though, take that weasel off Trump's head and he turns into Mussolini.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I can see him right now with his lips pursed and this, that, and the other. And
yeah, I mean, just Google, I mean, anybody out there listening, just Google Trump and Google Mussolini and set the photographs side by side.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He did. I thought the same thing when I saw him. And, you know, I said, well, there it is, and there you have it. However.
Well, the difference, though, being, Jim, he still has to deal with the Congress. And as we've seen, well, as any president, living or dead, could tell you, dealing with Congress is never any fun. Even if you've got a compliant Congress, I mean, it wasn't just a walk in the park for FDR.
Mm-mm.
They still have to be coped with, and worked with. And yes, we now have a word courtesy of Devin, Jim, Trumpolini. Trumpolini.
Well said, Devin.
Yeah.
Well said. Absolutely. But I just wanted to share with you my agreement about the id of the Republican Party and the stupidity of a lot of people in this nation who think that Donald Trump is just the best thing since sliced bread, and he's going to be the answer to all our solutions, and he's going to tie all these splinter groups together and just
you know who scares me the most out of all those is the Sparkle Pony Progressives. Because they can be led off down the garden path ever so easily. You know, you can already hear it, can't you?
Oh, but he favors single-payer health care. Oh, good.
Or,
but he supports the gay rights and single-payer health care. Well, you know, I mean, I could support that.
Well, you know, a lot of these people say a lot of things to attract those elements of what you call the Sparkle Pony Progressives. And a lot of people are taken in by it. I mean, we've seen in history so many people, good people, who've been taken in by bad men, like you said before, and we talked about before. Mm-hmm. I got a funny story for you that doesn't relate to Trump. If you want to hear it, I'd be glad to tell you.
Oh, absolutely.
I happened to be watching TV the other day. And they have this black judge named Judge Karen, who is an absolutely beautiful woman. She is very fair and extremely erudite. She's a Floridian. I think she's based out of Miami. And the litigants before her, one were the Wiccans, or a lady who represented the Wiccans, and the other was a man who was suing for medical bills, and of course, trauma and all types of things that go along with that, you know what I'm saying, you know. And so what happened was the Wiccan lady was with a group of her people, and they were out in the forest, and I guess they weren't wearing any clothes, but they were out there worshiping, you know, whatever they worship, and that's fine with me. Got no problem with that. And what bothered the soul, they were just in the middle of the forest and doing their thing, and this guy happens to walk up on them and see them and gets all freaked out, and of course he stays there and watches these naked people, because Judge Karen said, well, were there men there too? She said, which one were you watching? And then he runs and breaks his arm. Falls in the forest.
They are desperate for program content, aren't they?
They are. And she said, well, why?
When he fell in the forest, did he make a noise? Does anybody know?
He made a big noise, or he tried to on that program. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And so then he said afterwards that the evil spirits of the Wiccans had possessed him, and he was incapacitated for at least 3 to 4 days and had to find somebody who would exorcise him, and I don't know who that might be. And the judge, before she got to it, just said, what are you doing here? And said,
well, you know, those
you know, and she said, and my parents did not send me to law school to listen to this kind of bullshit. That's exactly what she said on TV. And she said, get out of here.
And that's the thing. I mean, I've got a very dear friend of long standing who is a Wiccan high priestess. And she doesn't even command enough powers to keep a 5-foot alligator off of her neighbor's back deck this past week. So I don't know what compelled him to run and break his arm in the forest, but I don't think it was any evil spirits.
I don't think it was either, but I mean, the fact that he would actually get up there, I don't know if they pay these people or whatever, but I just...
Oh, yeah, everybody's compensated on those things.
I mean, I was just collapsing before and just laughed and laughed and laughed. But, you know, I watch her program fairly often because she does make a lot of sense in what she says to people. I mean...
I've never heard of her. I will have to research her after the program.
Yeah, and as far as Judge Judy is concerned, oh, my God, I wouldn't go before that woman unless I had all my ducks in a row, because you're going to get your ass handed to you. But nonetheless, I mean, you know, it's just amazing how litigation-oriented people are. Of course, they get paid for it, and this, that, and the other. But I must say, it was outstanding entertainment, and that was the only value of it. But
I think if you win, you get like $500. If you lose, you get a year's supply of Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat, or perhaps some Cremette's elbow macaroni, America's favorite. God, for-profit broadcasting, help me.
But I just thought to myself, well, okay, there it is, there you have it, and I said, and Jim, there you are watching it, and you're loving every minute of it, because the thing got more and more ridiculous as it, you know, as he went through his argument against. I guess he would be the plaintiff, and the
ladies and gentlemen, Trump.
Yeah, but nonetheless, I mean, Mr. Trump needs to be listened to, not believed, but listened to, because he's missing enough truth, or his own version of the truth, just enough to appeal to a lot of people who could be taken in by that crap.
Well, that Onion article was way too close to the truth. The fact of the matter is, if he wasn't in the race, the much ballyhooed and anticipated Fox News debate this August, less than a month away, wouldn't have near the draw that it has. People are going to tune in. And I'm not just talking about the Republican base. It's going to be happy days tuning in to watch Fonzie jump the shark.
Okay? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, what kind of numbers, speaking of television, what kind of numbers did Sharknado 3 bring down last night?
Oh, I
on the Sci-Fi Channel. Big numbers. Big numbers.
Oh, they've got so many versions of that thing.
Oh, there's going to be a Sharknado 4.
Oh, and they have, I don't know how they put these names together, but enough, I guess, to give them a proper amount of alliteration or whatever, but it's just absolutely absurd. Absolutely. And, by the way, guess who Rachel Maddow had on her show last night?
Do tell.
Rick Santorum.
Oh. I know. Tamron Hall on MSNBC. Somebody booked Steve Deese out of Iowa to talk about Trump and what he said about John McCain the other day. I'm like, and I'm thinking, really? I mean, slow news day? Is there nothing? Absolutely nothing? I guess I don't have the proper understanding, Jim, of what it is, what it takes to put together a for-profit media television broadcast. Because I would have gladly gone to the color bars before I would have given Steve Deese. I mean, he's an odious, noxious, vile, hate-filled, right-wing POS out of Iowa who sat there and wanted to scream about, oh, Jesus, what was it? The Clintons had dinner with a terrorist when they started talking about what Trump said about McCain. And it evaded me. It just left me in the dust. I got no idea how this stuff happens.
It happens because, I mean, one thing sparks the other. If one thing is outrageous and people, you know, sort of adhere to it and the for-profit media gives attention to it, then this other guy gets up there and says, well, I got to say something that's even more outrageous than what he said.
Well, that and the only way the Republican contenders can get any airtime at all now is to call Donald Trump a name. And so this is the fourth estate reduced to third grade playground politics.
Exactly. And the name of the game is just escalation in the highest form of stupidity.
All day long, MSNBC has been promoting the fact that tomorrow morning, sometime between 6 and 9, so that way you have to watch the whole thing, mind you, that Donald Trump will be interviewed by Joe and Mika on Morning Joe. And why?
Well, again,
they slipped one point in time. I think it's going to be in the 7 o'clock hour. But the answer is third grade playground politics.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, Senator, my opinion is that Donald Trump, and I agree with what you said, and you really flat hit it on the head when you said the id, or the baser elements of the levels of mental structure, and you know that's it. And I'm just scared of people like that. I really am. I've seen it happen too much, and that's all I got to say. And I'm going to leave the phone for somebody else who's probably got a hell of a lot more to say than I do.
It was a good conversation, Jim. You have a good evening.
Same to you, sir.
Bye.
Glad you're feeling better.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.
And I mean, let's consider the other candidates. Who's running second behind Trump right now? Jebya. Whose idea for making America great again? You know, because we're not great right now because we got one of those in the White House. His idea for making is that people aren't working hard enough. That we're not uniquely American enough. That somehow we're being bested by call center workers in Mumbai and 12-year-olds chained to tables in an industrial plantation in Guangdong province, China. And even though it is an absolute truth, the, I mean, this is an absolute universal truth along the lines of the thought experiment about infinite monkeys with infinite typewriters, and one of them will eventually write Hamlet. Eventually, Donald Trump will insult, and gravely, every human being in America. But you know what? That will not be enough to put paid to his candidacy. Because it'll be a case of, hit him again, I can put a little stank on it this time. There's an element of this country that feels like we need some tough love. And Donald Trump will insult everybody short of Emery and Marvelline in the matching Barca loungers. This is kind of like me predicting that the South Carolina legislature wouldn't take down the devil's diaper. I want to be wrong about this, but it comes with caveats. I want to be wrong about this, but I don't want to be wrong too soon. The only two people who are generating any kind of excitement in the political realm right now in anticipation of the 2016 presidential election are, over on the right, Donald Trump, and over on our side, where all the normal air-breathing humans are, Bernie Sanders. No Hillary bashing, but I don't see anybody out there just saying, ooh, we can't wait. But maybe again, that's because I'm in some sort of an isolated position, and I don't, I'm talking to the wrong people. But I haven't heard that kind of whoop-de-doo. Jack in Shreveport notes, Jebya, we gotta use that, Jebya. Make him wear his brother like a cheap suit. Jebya says he wants to phase out Medicare. He says the people getting it now would continue getting it, but he'd phase it out for everybody else. Of course, he doesn't have a plan for it. Oh, yes, he does. Ask Alan Grayson, or just queue up Alan Grayson. Don't get sick. If you do get sick, die quickly. And, of course, Medicaid is communism. And, I mean, look, every day is a new fight. Just today, in the Congress, they had to fight off an attack to cut 200,000 people off of Social Security. The working theory was that the Republicans or some contingent of them wanted to eliminate from Social Security rolls anyone with a drug conviction. Really? Not a joke. How does a cockamamie idea like that even get enough force behind it to be considered in Congress? But there it is. Steve Rosenfeld has an article at Alternet victory. Pro-Social Security activists and senators halt GOP plan to kick 200,000 off benefits for having arrest warrants. Okay, so it wasn't necessarily drug convictions. But just arrest warrants. Not arrest convictions, just warrants. Sobering, isn't it? I mean, that'd be a great way. Just a warrant. It was an amendment to the highway bill. And see, this is how so much of the dirty business gets done in Congress. The highway bill, just like the defense bill, Jeff Flake and John McCain out in Arizona quietly slipped a little something something into a Pentagon bill that stripped Apache people of sacred land that had been protected for 60 years or more, so that it could be sold to Rio Tinto. And everybody in the Horn family commune congregation knows what an evil bunch of SOBs Rio Tinto are. You had Chiricahua Apache walking, traveling all over the country, trying to bring some attention to what's being done to them. And here's the way the deal worked. Rio Tinto said, well, we will trade Arizona and the federal government some land we hold in exchange for that land over there, and it's really not much. It's not valuable or anything. I mean, we just kind of like it. I mean, it's not because it's got a bunch of minerals underneath and precious metals and shit that we want to mine and sell and ruin the water table in a desertified area anyway. No, we just like it. And it got snuck into a defense bill that nobody bothered to read. Same thing with the Social Security business. The 1,000-page transportation bill had this little Social Security thingy snuck into it, by which people who had unpaid court fees, not even criminal activity, would have their Social Security slashed in order to round up $2.3 billion for highway projects, many of which would, of course, be down south where they get a lot more back than they ever put in. And West Virginia falls within that category as well. According to the Huffington Post, it was similar to a provision from the 1996 welfare reform law designed to stop benefits to fleeing felons, a scheme that was broadened in 2005 and eventually stymied by federal courts. The program had ensnared some innocent people who happened to have the same names as felons and also stopped benefits to some people guilty of things like writing bad checks in the far distant past. In 2009, the Social Security Administration agreed to pay $500 million in back benefits to 80,000 people who had wrongfully been cut off. The anti-poverty group Justice in Aging analyzed the proposal and said, those most likely to lose benefits are generally those most in need. A significant number of people will become homeless when they lose their benefits. Some people have had benefits cut off while residing in nursing homes. A very high percentage of those who will lose their benefits are people with intellectual disabilities or mental illness. An unusually high percentage of those who lose benefits are, come on, fill in the blanks, this is easy, African Americans. Many will lose Medicare outpatient Part B coverage because of inability to pay the quarterly premium. Eliminating what may be their only source of income does not resolve these issues. Many people never know that a warrant has been issued for them, as warrants are often not served on the individual. The warrants are often not easily resolved, since many of those who lose benefits live far from the issuing jurisdiction, and the Social Security Administration will have increased administrative costs for processing appeals and requests for waiver of recovery over payments. Nonetheless, Republicans thought it was a magnificent idea. And it was just stopped by Democrats in the Senate today. Because we live in a country where it is something right near heretical to suggest that the richest among us should pay something approaching a fair amount of money for the privileges of everything we have in this country that protects them and protects their wealth. But meanwhile, if you want to screw over somebody who's maybe in their right mind an eighth of any given day in a nursing home, well, Congress can do that. Because this is a brutal nation. This is a hard nation. This is a cruel nation. Again, witness Sandra Bland. And once again, it's the same stuff all over again. A person of color dies under mysterious or at least questionable circumstances. And immediately, or almost immediately, the process of slandering the victim goes into overdrive. Michael Brown, strong arm robbery! Eric Garner, selling Lucy's. Tamir Rice, he had the colored piece off the end of his pistol and we thought it was real, so we blew him away in 2 seconds. And now Sandra Bland, she smoked the marijuanas! Not long before she died, Sandra Bland left a voicemail on a friend's phone. At the time, she was still locked inside the Waller County Jail. They may be very nearly her last words.
The judge, I don't really know. They got me set at a...
Hang on.
The judge, I don't really know. They got me set at a $5,000 bond. I'm still just at a loss for words, honestly, about this whole process. How they're switching lanes with no signal turning to all of this, I don't even know. But I'm still here, so...
Yeah, it doesn't exactly sound like a suicidal person, does it? Doesn't sound like somebody who just smoked a bunch of the marijuanas either, does it? And, of course, the ongoing slander includes the fact that Sandra Bland had allegedly a prior suicide attempt. Although it turns out it was never reported, and her family knew nothing about it. She cited lost a baby and then the means by which she attempted suicide, pills. Interestingly, she also had a video commentary that she called Sandy Speaks. She spoke out frequently about issues of race, injustice, and was an ardent supporter of the Black Lives Matter movement. And, of course, the for-profit media have dutifully reported the BS marijuana stuff, even without remarking, as I do here, that in no jurisdiction in the United States is either possession or consumption of cannabis a capital offense. And in point of fact, we have a constitution that says that before even capital punishment can be administered, a certain amount of due process of law should be available, must be available. $5,000 bond on a resisting arrest charge when there is no evidence whatsoever that she resisted anything. But these things happen in America, don't they? And also, you cannot be summarily executed in this country for smoking a cigarette while being pulled over. I don't think there's what is that failure to obey a lawful order from a police officer? Put out your cigarette is a lawful order from anything a police officer tells you is a lawful order. Today, the Waller County District Attorney and the prosecutor had themselves a little press conference. Warren D. Prom said, THC is a mind-altering substance. If it's in your body, it's going to impair you. And, of course, they said that there's no evidence here of homicide. And for that, and with that in mind, I think Charles Blow's review of the matter is particularly. In a column simply titled Questions About the Sandra Bland Case, Charles Blow, as I said, puts in more content than David Brooks or Thomas Friedman would if they kept writing from now until doomsday. Charles Blow says, I have so many questions about the case in which Sandra Bland was arrested in a small Texas town and died in police custody. These are questions that ought to be easy to answer, questions that I suspect many others may share. Here are just some of the areas of my inquiry. And Devin points out, what, there was no evidence of homicide? Oh, they cleaned up after themselves. Right. But they didn't, Devin. Listen to this. One, on the video released by the Texas Department of Public Safety of Bland's traffic stop, the arresting officer Brian Insignia tells her that the reason for her stop is that she failed to signal for a lane change. The officer returns to his car, then approaches Bland's vehicle a second time. He remarks to Bland, you seem very irritated. Bland responds, I am. I really am. I was getting out of your way. You were speeding up, tailing me, so I move over and you stop me. So, yeah, I'm a little bit irritated. Charles Blow asks, was Bland simply trying to move out of the way of a police vehicle? Of course, this is one of the oldest tactics in the world. I remember years and years ago, there was a case in which a sheriff's deputy here in this county, not very far from where I am right now, drove an individual to his death. We have little winding mountain roads, and what they do is the police will rush up on your bumper, and then they'll back off, and then they'll rush up again in an attempt to make you do something that will constitute a probable cause stopping offense, because I guess they just want to screw with somebody. I remember a long time ago a police officer trying to do that to me on a winding road in West Virginia, and I just jumped on my brakes. He went in a ditch. When there was a question asked, I said, "Hey, deer jumped out in front of me. Welcome to West Virginia. What do you want?" So that's a game they play, the tailing game. The video shows the officer's car accelerating behind Bland's and passing a sign indicating a speed limit of 20 miles per hour. How fast was the officer closing the distance on Bland before she changed lanes? Was it completely reasonable for her to attempt to move out of his way? 2, the officer, while standing at the closed driver's side door, asks Bland to extinguish her cigarette. As soon as she refuses, he demands that she exit the vehicle. Was the demand to exit because of the refusal? If so, what statute in Texas or anywhere in America stipulates that a citizen can't smoke during a traffic stop? 3. According to Insignia's signed affidavit, Bland was removed from the car and placed in handcuffs for officer safety. You know, because she's a dangerous black woman. The reason for the arrest is unclear to me. At one point, Insignia says, "You were getting a warning. Until now, you're going to jail." So what was the arrest for at that point? Failure to comply? Later in the video, Insignia says, "You're going to jail for resisting arrest." If that was the reason, why wasn't Bland charged with resisting arrest? The affidavit reads, "Bland was placed under arrest for assault on public servant." Was the assault cigarette smoke? Is Insignia one of those precious individuals who just can't be near cigarette smoke? And in that case, does Insignia have any business being a police officer? Charles Blow says, "Insignia's instructions to Bland are a jumble of confusion. After she's handcuffed, he points to for her to come read the warning ticket and then immediately pulls back on her arm, preventing her from moving the direction that he pointed, now demanding that she stay right here. He then commands Bland to stop moving, although, as she points out, "You keep moving me." What was she supposed to do? This, of course, is another cop game. Failure to comply with things that cannot be complied with. And somewhere along the line, you, poor soul, caught up in this little game, will up. And then, boom, he's gotcha. If, in fact, that's what the cop has decided to do. Now, these things are not taught at the academy. Oh, no, no, no. A million times no. At the academy, they teach you all the straight and narrow. This is cultural stuff. This is stuff the older officers teach the younger officers. This is how to survive on the mean streets. Or maybe it's just how to make some mouthy black woman's life miserable. Because you can and you have the power. You know, I told you I have been reading of late the book by Ta-Nehisi Coates, Between the World and Me. It's not a very long book at all. 152 pages on a Kindle device. And there are
There are a lot of just simply brilliant observations in it. But one that seems particularly applicable to the topic under discussion. I was tweeting some quotes earlier today, but unfortunately for me, Amazon's Kindle app doesn't interface well with Facebook and Twitter, so you can't actually see the link to the part that was highlighted and quoted. But this just jumped out at me right off the page. In respect of the Sandra Bland case, the truth, he writes, is that the police reflect America in all of its will and fear. And whatever we might make of this country's criminal justice policy, it cannot be said that it was imposed by a repressive minority. The abuses that have followed from these policies, the sprawling carceral state, the random detention of black people, the torture of suspects, are the product of democratic will. Little d, democratic. And so to challenge the police is to challenge the American people who send them into the ghettos armed with the same self-generated fears that compelled the people who think they are white to flee the cities and into the dream. The problem with the police is not that they are fascist pigs, but that our country is ruled by majoritarian pigs. That one went all the way down to the ground for me. I suppose one could take issue with the line that it cannot be said that it was imposed by a repressive minority. The 1% are, if nothing else, a repressive minority. There's a hell of a lot more of us than there are of them. But they control the government. And look, just today, only by a hair's breadth did 200,000 American citizens miss being thrown into the streets by Republicans controlled by that repressive minority. And see, as was the case with Michael Brown, with Eric Garner, selling Lucy's! And with Sandra Bland, she ate the marijuanas while in custody. The dead cannot defend themselves against the smears perpetrated against them by the guilty, by the killers. This is a brutal place, and Mr. Coates knows it well. The problem with the police is not that they are fascist pigs, but that our country is ruled by majoritarian pigs. Because remember, if it comes out of the Congress, if it gets signed by the president, it's a function of majority rule, and you can go all the way back to the Federalist Papers, where James Madison will tell you that whatever it is we decide to do, we're going to call it democracy, whether it is or not. It'll be democracy because it's the democracy we decide you people need. Well, I mean, you'll get to vote for the people in the House. You won't get to vote for the senators. You're damn sure not going to vote for the president,
but it's still going to be democracy. And to this day, well-meaning people, progressive people, people who should goddamn well know better, sit there and they get that sort of that sort of faraway look in their eyes, and they say, "Our democracy." Bull! But for the sake of appearances, we do, as Mr. Coates notes, play the game that these majoritarian repressions are democratic in their origin. Because we all want to be tough on crime, don't we? I mean, if it means that we have to kill a Sandra Bland or a Michael Brown or a Tamir Rice or an Eric Garner or a Walter Scott or nine people, well, no, the cops didn't do that one. But if we got to do that once in a while to make sure that America is safe in its little white enclave, well, that's just the price people have to pay. And then other people pay the price for the Second Amendment, like nine people in a church in Charleston, South Carolina. Or some people in a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado. Or some people in a shopping center in Tucson, Arizona. Or some six-year-olds trying to go to school in Newtown, Connecticut. It's all a matter of people paying prices for which they are never actually presented a bill until the ultimate moment. And in that ultimate moment, when the bill is presented, there is no disputing it. You merely pay with your blood and your life. Back to Charles Blow. Point four. According to Insinia's affidavit, at some point after being handcuffed, Bland began swinging her elbows at me and then kicked my right leg in the shin. That's a quote. On the dash cam video, a commotion happens out of view of the camera, with Bland complaining that she is being hurt. "You're about to break my wrist. You knocked my head into the ground. I got epilepsy." Insinia and another officer insist that Bland stop moving. Insinia can be heard to say, "You're yanking around. When you pull away from me, you're resisting arrest." Neither the dash cam video nor a video taken by a bystander shows a discernible kick. When Insinia re-enters the frame of the dash cam, he explains to a female officer, "She started yanking away, then kicked me, so I took her straight to the ground." The female officer points to Insinia's leg as she says, "Yeah, and there you got it, right there." Insinia says, "One thing for sure, it's on video." Only it isn't. Why exactly was Bland walked out of the frame of view of the dash cam for the arrest procedure? Because don't think for a minute that the cops don't tell each other what the width of view is of that damned camera. Body cams, dash cams. The only reason we talk about these cameras is because there is a fundamental problem with the police in this country and the people who empower them that makes them opt for violence. And it's not the same with the police. I mean, what? Police in Germany discharged their weapons 85 times in an entire year in an entire country. And any time a weapons discharge takes place, a massive investigation is launched. A police officer discharges a weapon in Australia, and it is cause for national concern. Here, it's just Wednesday. Five. This is where it gets really interesting. The initial video posted by Texas authorities also has a number of visual glitches, vanishing cars, looping sequences, but no apparent audio glitches. The director of Selma, Ava DuVernay, tweeted, "I edit footage for a living, but anyone can see that this official video has been cut. Read, watch, why?" She included a link to a post pointing out the discrepancies in the video. According to NBC News, Tom Vinger, a spokesman for the Department of Public Safety, blamed a technical issue during posting. He said that the department was working to correct the video. What kinds of technical difficulties were these? Why wouldn't the audio also have witches. Authorities have now released a new, slightly shorter video. 6. Texas authorities say that while in the Waller County jail cell, Bland used a trash bag from a trash can in the cell to hang herself. Is it standard procedure to have trash cans with trash bags in jail cells? Is the can secured to the floor? If not, couldn't it be used by an inmate to hurt herself or other inmates or jail staff? I mean, you could break off a part of the trash can and sharpen it into a shank, couldn't you? According to a report on Wednesday by the Houston Chronicle, Bland disclosed on a form at the jail that she previously had attempted suicide over that past year, although she also indicated she was not feeling suicidal at the time of her arrest, according to officials who attended the Tuesday meeting with local and state leaders investigating the case. Shouldn't they have known it was a suicide risk? The Bureau of Justice Statistics points out that suicide is the number one cause of non-illness-related deaths in local jails, although blacks are least likely to commit those suicides. And between 2000 and 2011, about half of those suicides occurred within the first week of admission. Mr. Blow asks, why weren't more precautions taken, like, oh, I don't know, removing any suicide risks from the cell? Man, can you imagine David Brooks even attempting this?
While it may seem prudent to have removed suicide risks from the cell, one must understand that the law enforcement is not trying to actively encourage suicide.
7. Houston's Channel 2 aired exclusive video from inside the Waller County jail cell where Sandra Bland was found dead. Got that? This becomes important. In the video, a trash can, a very large one, is clearly visible. But strangely, it appears to have a trash bag in it. If Bland used the trash bag to hang herself, where did the one in the can come from? Did they replace it? Why would the jail staff do that? 8. NBC News' John Yang also toured the cell, and in his video he says that things are really the same as it was that morning, when officers found Bland's body, including food. Dinner untouched was the language used in the title of the video on NBCNews.com, and a Bible. Oh, dear God, there's a Bible. On the bed, opened to Psalms. That Bible appears to be closed in the Channel 2 video. Who opened it between the two videos? And what page is the Bible open to in the NBC video? It is open to Psalm 119. And at the top of the page are verses 109 to 110. Though I constantly take my life in my hands, I will not forget your law. The wicked have set a snare for me, but I have not strayed from your precepts. Says Mr. Blow, eerie or convenient. Also in the Channel 2 video, there are orange shoes on the floor by the bed. In the NBC video, they're gone. Who moved them? Why? Where are they? Yang says of the trash bag in the can, around her neck, they say, was a trash bag, an extra trash bag from this receptacle. So what gives here? Extra trash bag? Was there more than one trash bag in the cell, or had that one been replaced? It is also worth noting that the video shows what appears to be a rope holding a shower curtain. Isn't this an active investigation? Shouldn't that cell be treated like a crime scene? Why are reporters allowed to wander through it? Who all's been in it? Maybe there are innocent and convincing answers to all these questions and others. I hope so. People need things to make sense. When there are lapses in logic in what people think would be reasonable explanations, suspicion spreads. So in one video, remember, of an untouched jail cell, you've got orange plastic shower shoes, and a Bible open to Psalm 119. In another video, the orange shower shoes are gone. And the shoes, let's see. Shower shoes, closed Bible. No shoes, open Bible. I guess in Waller County they've moved on from shot trying to escape to committed suicide with garbage bag. By the way, hanging oneself is an ugly way to go. Hanging oneself with a garbage bag. Never in a million years would that occur to me. Unless there was some sort of God-awful determination to die. And resisting arrest in Texas? Hell, doesn't it? What? Half of Texas probably has a resisting arrest bust, do they not? Look cross-eyed at the police and you're resisting arrest or resisting lawful authority or maybe just stink eye in the police. It may be a crime, I don't know. That's a suicide offense? That's the kind of thing that makes you think, well, I'm never, you know. She was getting ready to start a brand new job at her alma mater, Prairie View A&M, in Texas. And what? She decides to kill herself because Prairie View A&M won't have any truck with a woman who was pulled over and popped for resisting arrest? That all of that can't be explained away? It doesn't make any sense at all. But then, to take that trash bag, and I mean, how big a trash bag? A contractor bag? One of those big sons of bitches? And then to figure out a way to hang yourself with it and not have the plastic break or stretch? I mean, if you bring clothing home from the dry cleaner and it's got the little dry cleaning bag over it and it says in bold red letters, choking hazard or suffocation hazard. Because you can suffocate in one. Especially children who don't know better. Why not just tie it around your neck and breathe in and out until all the oxygen's gone and you die of carbon dioxide poisoning? Man, you must really want to die. Because you resisted arrest by not putting your cigarette out when you were told to. Make any sense to you? Because it doesn't make a damn bit to me. Twenty minutes past the hour. If you'd like to be in the part of the conversation, you're welcome to. Yeah, see, Devin says, I don't know how many damn drumliners it would take to hold my fat ass up. Or mine. I mean, that was, and maybe that's because we're thinking like guys, and men are bigger than women generally. Maybe Sandra Bland was a tiny little slip of a thing, who could hang herself with a kitchen garbage bag.
still doesn't make any sense. Those things are suffocation hazards. Why is there an extra in the garbage can? I got no answers. Let's run over to the Skype line and see what's happening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Bob. It's Mark.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I'm great, and I can hear a relief in your voice concerning your health, and I'm happy for you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, the hypoglycemic stuff just happens sometimes, and it sucks.
I know you were frustrated with yourself. There's nothing we can do about it, obviously, but I listen to your show all the time, even though I haven't called. A lot of things you've predicted, Bob, are the things that you talk about, from the so-called attempt from the political right to cause, low-level insurrections. I think there's been some haphazard attempts to make those things occur, to include that Twin Peaks situation in Texas. But, I don't know if I've told you before, for a short time, when I got out of the Marines, I'd gone back to my native state and lost a job at a power plant due to politics. So I had put all my ducks in one basket and started to shift gears rather quickly, and I knew that law enforcement was looking for people. So I did attend a police academy and did become a city of Miami policeman. I could have gone Metro Dade. I passed the exam for both, and I chose the city. And I would say that just about an hour ago, I was looking at something that might have been alternate or somewhere, but they show the footage of the sheriff or policeman or whatever he was. Was he a state cop that called for backup, or was the sheriff called for backup and a state cop showed up, Bob? Do you know?
In which case?
In the
Bland case? No, he's a state trooper. Encinia is a state trooper, or he's being identified as such.
That kind of shores up my possible observation. It's something I haven't heard discussed on national television or amongst us, but in that footage, and it was already on my mind, so I just kind of had it in the back of my mind. He makes a U-turn on this quiet morning, a quiet looking traffic. And I don't know this to be a fact, but, Illinois has front license plates and back. And I think she's from Chicago, is she not? So she's down there possibly driving Illinois tag.
Well, see, that was the first thing I thought. I mean, even when I'm driving around here, Mark, and I see somebody pulled over, I always just take a peek to see, because, and you know the roads of this country pretty well, from Erie, Pennsylvania, that's where I-79 terminates. And so if you're coming down from Ontario, one of the good ways, depending on where you are, to get here is to get on I-79, come straight down from Erie, Pennsylvania, through Pittsburgh, down to exit 57 in West Virginia of I-79, and then you get on US 19, and it forms a straight line, straight down toward, well, basically Myrtle Beach. And we have a lot of Canadian and PA and New York traffic that comes down through here. And I would say more often than not, if you see a roller with his lights flashing and somebody pulled over, at least one time out of three you're going to see Ontario plates. Because, see, they just pay the ticket and move on. It's not law enforcement. It's not traffic management. It is tax farming. And an out-of-state plate, and God knows, an out-of-state plate in an Alabama or a Mississippi or a Louisiana or a Texas is just begging to be pulled over. I mean, and I take that into account just because, well, I mean, I've got training that teaches me how to think about this stuff. And if I'm in Virginia with my West Virginia plates,
I don't go a damn mile over the speed limit. I signal for every lane change. I have my lights on when it's raining. I try to take into account all the things that can be probable cause, because you never know when you're going to run across a bad cop. And I mean no offense to you, because I know you've worked law enforcement. But am I wrong?
Well, no, you know, it's definitely no offense to me, Bob, because I was the same person that I am today, with a little more experience and life, you know, obviously in life today, but with more determined views, or equally determined views, but with less time to respond to them sometimes as a younger man. But I had my same perspective that I've shared with you, and I think that's what draws me towards your your observations are almost always exactly identical to the way I see a lot of things. And I think that's because somehow or another we have kind of like peace in our heart. We fight for peace. Now I think not to talk about me and you, but I mean I think you're actually even more peace driven than I am, because you're probably more civilized than me, but I'm with you in that same struggle. But it's no offense to me, because I actually, as a rookie cop, I was just telling the story the other day, because this case had brought that out of me and many other things that I see in our national news, and in our life experiences, you know, the heavy-handedness of ridiculousness, the way people respond, and it's just like, they've got the idiots guarding the recruiting places. We had a fucking shooting in Ohio, an accidental, you know, I knew that was going to happen, you know, it's like, and, you know, and even the armed forces were sharp enough to say, maybe it was specifically the Marines, I don't know, I have to nail, you know, I don't really have to nail it down, doesn't interest me totally enough to want to know, but if I arbitrarily find out, but basically, they don't want them out there, and I would agree with that. It makes us look like Guatemala, but, you know, I think he was acting in a predatory fashion. I think once he sees that tag and a black female and his size, he's not a real big dude, and it's day shift. So a lot of the combat law enforcement goes down at night. So he's made it to the second level of bureaucracy or third level. He's back on day, whatever his circumstances are. So there's a lot of observations that could be made that may not be apropos, but, you know, he's on day shift. It's 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, whatever the time, you know, and he pulls over a female, so he knows he can handle her in his mind, and she's an uppity black girl from Chicago, so in his mind, so he's already got a preconceived notion, and I think that's why he makes the comment to her, "You seem upset." And, well, you know, Illinois, I was thinking about the goddamn traffic around Chicago. Illinois cops will pass you on the right or on the left. They don't give a damn about your turn signals. If she's from the city, she doesn't even, you know, people live in the big city, they don't even really worry about cops like you would in a smaller town. You know, in a smaller town, you kind of have to watch your P's and Q's. Even where I'm speaking to you from right now, I mean, I know the lay of the land, because I'm tactical in my mindset, but I'm so well established in it that I can move at a comfortable pace here, with the lay of the land, because I know it so well, like a hunter. So I know where to look for people and how to drive, and I'm very consistent. But what I'm saying is, if you come from an urban area and you go into this area where she was in Texas, She thought she was doing him a favor by getting out of his way, and that's what he used against her. So his whole foundation doesn't really establish itself from a probable cause standpoint to begin with, I believe. And so how she ends up dead are two separate cases. But the original pulling over, I think unfortunately it's going to end up having to be a lawsuit, because she did die, and the circumstances are shady.
Look at the process, Mark, of the run up and fall back and the run up and fall back. You've been listening to the program. Is that a real thing?
Yeah.
Is that a real thing?
Well, I have to say, I did hear you say that, Bob, and I would say, and I don't mean any offense to anybody that hears this comment, but and I think because I have to kind of caution how I explain my life to what I've experienced on a personal note to incorporate having worn a uniform in this country in a civilian capacity, which was not my true desire, but I wanted to serve, but I didn't want to be a fireman, but because I was kind of, and I feel I'm afraid of fire, but I wanted to just serve people. So, and I was actually kind of, not too nice, but kind of nice, too nice sometimes to help people. But what I'm saying is, and here's the part that's going to probably piss people off. In normal America, which is changing, not improving in some ways, in normal America, that's what small town cops do, whether it's in Cleveland or it's in, Calumet City or, it's being done, that type of behavior is done in small town law abiding America. But I think it's better now than it used to be, but I think that has been done. I would have to say in my own experience, when I did wear the uniform, that we looked at traffic as, we didn't even look at traffic. Traffic, for what I was involved with, was not even hardly a concern for probable cause, even when you needed it. I mean, in other words, you're getting pulled over regardless, and then we're determining probable cause because we had more important issues.
Right. Well, you didn't have time for that kind of gamesmanship.
Well, we actually, there were nights, Bob, when I left the police station, the roll call was at 9, and we got off at, I think 4 in the morning, but we left the station with signals waiting. So you got in your squad car, you were trying to determine whether you had enough gas in your squad car to get to that call. And most of the times they were in progress felonies. They actually, in Miami, was so busy at one point, they were prioritizing what were called 3 signals. You would have shots fired, respond to shots fired, exchange, man down. So they would prioritize. There were shots fired, man down, law enforcement involved.
Well, you were triaging the gun violence.
They were triaging gun violence and triaging stolen cars. You'd go to roll call, and they say, here are the list of cars that were stolen in the last 2 days. And so they'd hand them out, they'd Xerox it off, and everybody'd be sitting there in roll call. And then it got so out of control that by the time I left the business and found myself eventually drafted to the Marine Corps, they were looking not only just for stolen policemen's cars, they were looking for stolen policemen's cars who had their guns in them when they're
describing Miami versus the Marine Corps, Mark, it sounds like going back into the Marine Corps was a retreat into some form of sanity, stability, and normalcy.
It was way more civilized. It was way more rational. It had a lot more demarcated boundaries, acceptability, social progressiveness, professional approach and politeness and good morning and when you see a general that served in Korea and Vietnam look at you first and say, good morning, Marine, and you're 19 and 3 years ago you were playing baseball or shooting baskets at the Y, that made your heart feel you are now a part of something. And so It is more civilized, at least it used to be. I think that it kind of still can be. It might be, but it used to be quite civilized. I ran into guys, Bob, that if you weren't looking at them, and from the neck down, you would think you were dealing with the politeness of a Catholic priest. But these people had seen war. They were so kind and polite and gentle, but there was a brotherhood there that it was kind of astounding. And I mean, my first sergeant was a Dominican that I didn't know for probably almost a year that he was Latin because he looked like a black American, but he was black Dominican. His last name is Martinez, and that confused me being a kid from the Midwest. I quite piece that all together, being a, but I mean, I, my first sergeant had gotten out and became an English teacher and then came back into the Corps, and he would wear the illegal herringbone, you know, uniform, which was authorized during the 50s, but no longer accepted by Marine Corps standards, but because he wore it so professionally, so well professionally, heavily starched with his boots and his demeanor without any kind of attitude, and his caring for all the Marines in the company, brand new Marines to the older guys. He was such like a, he was a grandfather figure. I was 18, Bob, and I looked up at the end of my first physical fitness test on the island of Okinawa, but in the fleet now, after boot camp, after combat engineer school, and I looked up and I said, I looked around and said, is that the first sergeant? And they said, huh? What are you talking about? Is that him over there? And they go, yeah. And I go, well, how did he end up in front of us? They go, well, he beat us. He beat us. He beat us in the 3-mile run, Bob. He was 60 years old. He beat most of the Marines in the company in the 3-mile run. And I think I ran that 3 miles that day like in 19 minutes. So he did it like in 19 something, and I did it like in 1930, 1945. So, it is more demarcated. It is more polite. It is more accepting of people from everywhere. And it was more comfortable. It was more civilized. And then our civilian world. Our civilian world still today for me at my age in 2015 shocks me. It shocks me. And we're kind of going backwards and sideways. So, but yeah, I think he pulled that girl over, Bob, that lady over on purpose. He saw her. He was bored. It was a female, out of state female. And he may have seen she was smoking from the beginning. So he maybe was tuned into her nervousness about some situation. So she's an out-of-state black female from Chicago smoking. She had drugs in the car. So I'm not saying that's his mind thought that, but why would you be nervous? But she was nervous about a job interview or whatever.
You know, well, hell, I'm the whitest man in America, and if I get pulled over, my blood pressure goes up, my pulse rate goes up, and I can be as innocent as a newborn lamb. But I'm pulled over, and anything can go sideways because it's a police stop.
Well,
it's that way for me, just because I had 3 years of training that taught me that if, you know, maybe it'll get sorted out later, and probably not to your satisfaction.
I agree, and actually, Bob, even after having done the job and been pulled over a number of times, one of the things that I do, and you can't tell what I necessarily look like by the type of vehicle that I'm driving. My windows are tinted, and I could give you more of a description of what I drive, and it's not appropriate for my own personal safety. But what I'm saying is, when I get pulled over, I make sure that my window is completely down, and I leave both of my hands relaxed, nonetheless, on the steering wheel in a relaxed position, and I wait for law enforcement to approach, and as they approach and make their demand, I engage and say, okay, well, you're asking me for this, so that is in my visor or that is in my glove box. Do you want me to go ahead and reach for it? So I surrender all, and I just watched this discussion with a female lawyer on CNN, and then Don Lemon. And I disagree with, I understand what Don Lemon was trying to tell our listeners. Because he was doing it out of love and compassion. And what I'm saying is, and I'm not saying we should all subject, that's the correct argument, but our society is so, we don't talk to each other anymore. We don't see each other. We don't have to interrelate. We don't, that's why I think so many white people are upset with Latinos, because they don't have to assimilate, because there'll be 200 on a job or 20 on a job, and they don't need to speak English. And the whites should see them, and they've always got a good attitude or whatever. And so this is amongst whites and whites or whatever it may be. We don't really need to talk to each other. We are what they wanted when they killed John Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King. They got what they wanted. We are now consumers. We're no longer citizens, and we do what we're told. So, but from a personal safety standpoint, I surrender And when the request is made, before I make any physical movement, I say, sir, it's here or there, and do you want me to go ahead and reach for it now? And that's telling them that I understood the request. I do, and I watch even my sitting position, my body position, in a relaxed fashion. And I'm a dark complected white guy, but I'm Caucasian looking, and I am Caucasian, German and English by appearance, but I am dark, so it can confuse people a little bit. I've been asked if I was Puerto Rican, so because I speak Spanish, the thing is, it is very serious out here on the streets of America, and for all of us, no matter what our appearances, age, gender, and I don't know what's happening with the police. They just seem poorly connected to life on the life. They don't seem part of society. They seem to be, I think that they seem to have a mentality of it's us versus them, and I did witness that. And I started to experience that as a rookie cop, and I said, I'm not going to let this change Mark Hankins. I can't. This is not going to change me. I'm not going to become what it's dragging me to be. I'm not going to do it. And I had to leave it. And I think that I have to be grateful that as a Marine, I didn't let some things change me there either. But I think that's why the suicide rate is so high, because I think that a good-hearted, generally good-hearted Americans, regardless of their persuasion, have gotten themselves into situations that were out of control, and they overreacted, and they realized they hurt people that they shouldn't have, and they come home, and they kill themselves. And there's a movie that's out right now, which I'd like to see, but it's based on the 22 a day, and it's done by veterans from the Iraq War. So, and unfortunately, I'm a fan of Stan Goff, who's a Vietnam veteran, Special Forces, and he talks about the policification of the military and the militarization of police. And I witnessed that myself. And actually, I was kind of drawn to that, having been a soldier, but I pushed back, even knowing that then. And even, Bob, when I was in the Marine Corps, in counterintelligence, talking about this Operation Jade Helm thing in Texas, I did witness counterintelligence in the Marine Corps were doing operational training domestically in the United States in the 80s and 90s. And that concerned me just intuitively as an American, indirectly being a part of it, and said, I don't know that I want to continue with this, because I don't know if this is going to be used on Americans. That crossed my mind almost immediately when I realized what I was kind of becoming a part of. And I think I mentioned where I had to kind of lie on a paper that I've given to them about my views on Central America and the Acosta peace accords from Costa Rica as president, where they worked out the peace accords in Central America. So I had to lie to the Marines to get into the counterintelligence unit, but those were not my actual views. I was hoping for peace. I was hoping that if there was a war in Central America and I got dispatched there, that I could come up missing and be actually on my beach getting paid to be a part of that. But but I guess the point is, I think that the whole blast seems like predatory, and
it stinks of what the lawyers like to call mens rea, criminal intent. From start to finish, because how on earth, Mark? And it's the same question it's the same question we ask with Michael Brown. It's the same question we ask with Eric Garner, Walter Scott. How is it that whatever the offense is, be it selling Lucy's, which didn't happen, or strong arm robbery, which didn't happen, or in this case, resisting arrest, which appears not to have happened, how is it that any of those are summary execution offenses?
Right. And so, so how do you adjudicate assassination in uniform? How are you being executed on the streets? They're being assassinated. They're being
Well, quicker than it's summary. It is summary execution. It's extrajudicial killing. Look, I mean, isn't it time that we just fess up and say it, Mark? They're damn duds.
It appears to be a bit death squadish. And actually, I have to be honest with you. I just came back from a job, Bob, in the Northeast. And I'm driving on the outskirts. I'm in Maryland on my way through Washington, D.C., heading south. And I see a female mother fit boy in the back seat of a, I guess it was a Honda, but I didn't know if it was a BMW, what it was. One of the windows was down on the passenger side the whole time, and this is pretty heavy traffic. But behind the driver's seat, in the back, was a metal Confederate tag. But I thought, well, that's kind of odd, because the driver had, and here's Mark, witnessing, he had Massachusetts tags. But what also caught my eye, which I combined that with his appearance, his age, and his haircut, was that little black sticker with the thin blue line. And I said, that's a fucking cop from probably Boston or some city in Massachusetts.
Well, let's not pretend that the insignia and indicia of the Confederacy are a Southern phenomenon, Mark. I had a tweet from Get Native up in Minnesota who said, just saw my first Confederate flag in Minnesota. What the, you know, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot?
Oh, certainly, Bob. I certainly. I was astounded when I saw some in California. I was working Diablo Canyon, so I was at what the hell's Pismo Beach at a grocery store, and some, you know, they were hippie-looking kids to me, beach-looking kids, but they had that Confederate flag quite big in the back of a truck. I said, Jesus, it looks like Marion County, Florida, you know, here. I agree with you, Bob, and I had to learn that. I had to see that, and you're right, but it startled me because I'm thinking in my mind, from an innocence standpoint, I'm thinking Boston cop, Confederate tag. He may have been a small town cop, he may have been a big city cop, but he made the mistake of driving rather aggressively, and it kicked in my aggression, and I said, well, I have a state authorized tag, which would be in direct opposition to his off the shelf tag. Mine happens to be an American flag tag, bearing Martin Luther King's face on it. And so, people pull up next to me, and they don't know who's driving the vehicle. They can't tell who's in there driving. But so he immediately realized that I'd probably appreciate that. So I caught him about 10 miles down the highway, and I pulled up, and I won't tell you exactly what I said to him, but I asked his son, because I upset the father so much, and we're in four or five lanes of traffic, clipping along pretty quickly, and now we're in bumper-to-bumper traffic, and I said, you do know that's an advertisement for homosexual behavior, don't you? And I'm putting that politely, diplomatically. And I said, he's not queer, too. Is he? And I'm not, I was doing
Jesus,
that to,
Mark.
I was doing that to incite violence. I'm a big supporter of, you know,
I understand.
Right.
I understand. Yeah.
But I was trying to agitate him, and Dan, I didn't. And he tried to, he swerved at me two or three times on the highway. And I'm very, once I'm engaged, once I've lit the fuse, I'm very calm under fire. And I don't, it's because of my life, my athletic background and my Marines and then my G.I. Joe cop stuff. I'm very cool. I don't actually get too excited, but I'm able to go to a calm place in my mind and body. So he's trying to get me to respond physically. And I wouldn't. He's trying to get me to pull over on the highway. And then these other rednecks on the highway, and like a Mustang, they're backing him up. And I'm looking around for my black friends, you know. Oh, shit. But, you know, I looked at they showed military units and a bunch of guys, all white guys, probably 12 or 15 guys, and it looked like some kind of heavy track unit. And they had a Confederate flag. And I doubt that any of these liberals would challenge that. Well, the guy, whoever made that statement, was a civilian that's never worn a uniform. And I said, well, these are all National Guardsmen from Wisconsin or Ohio or West Virginia, wherever the hell they were from, Alabama, wherever they're from. I got the Confederate flag, but I was on Operation Team Spirit, and we built a base camp for 5,000 Marines that are, you know, there's 280,000 Marines, whatever the number is, but this is a big operation. There's 100,000 Americans in Team Spirit. I don't know how many Marines are involved in the overall operation, but our area of operation was 5,000 Marines at Pohang, where people were coming off the ships. In any case, we had these heaters, and it started to get cold over there, and we had these heaters that were from the domestic market, and these, being a combat engineer, we had to swap the heaters at once. We're catching the tents on fire. It's deadly, so I went into a tent and I said, I'll be back with a new heater. And I looked up and I said, I'm taking this heater because they're dangerous. I'll be back with a new heater. And I looked up, there was three white Marines, good-sized dudes, playing cards by themselves with a Confederate flag up, literally right next to their table. And so I had to maintain my composure. I've been a big guy. My voice is kind of high-pitched. I'm a pretty good-sized guy. And I immediately was, like, fighting mad, and I said, and when I come back with your heater, that will be down. And as I marshaled myself out of the tent, I said, we're flying one flag, gents. One flag. That's what I said. And so when I came back, Bob, I intentionally came back later to that tent because I didn't want to have to get in a fight and possibly win. To make my point, I'm not that much of a hothead. I can't fight like a mountain cat if I need to, but I came back and the flag was gone. And I said, well, that's good. And so here's their heater. Because I was professional enough to be that way. But I can fight rather quickly. I'm not General Sherman crazy, but I can be pretty hot. But it's been an amazing few months, and I haven't called the show, but there's been so much shit happening. We've got the militia guarding the Marines now, so I feel totally.
You're just totally safe because, you know, the doofus who couldn't get a 12 on the ASVAB just shot the fucking concrete, right?
I guess, yeah. What a bunch of. It's making this country look like a bunch of what we are, Trump voters, but what a bunch of high tech rednecks. I don't think most Americans could even tell you state capitals anymore. They don't even know. They don't even know. It's amazing. But anyway, I struggle for peace. I sorry, I carry a bit of an aggressive edge to me, but
I think you're doing quite well with the struggle, Mark. I really do.
I'm sorry, but I love Bernie Sanders, Bob. I think he's a good man. I have spoke to him on the Tom Hartman show. I think I spoke to him once for sure, maybe twice. He's so cool. I don't know what to say to him the second time. I've developed a relationship, I think, kind of with you because we're closer in age and we have a lot in common personality-wise. You're way more educated than I am in a lot of areas. You know, I listen to some of your things that you discuss with people that have education. I was like, shit, I don't know all that stuff. But Bob ultimately gets back to square one, and I always thank you for being a peaceful American and always balanced. And I don't know that Bernie's going to make it. I did hear an observation, and I'll get out of your hair, but I did hear an observation that you were alluding to earlier that, you know, Sanders has got a lot of attention, and Trump's got a lot of attention, but isn't it interesting that the national media, the corporate-controlled media, is only covering the Trump aspect, not Bernie Sanders? So they don't want that message. But that would be my message.
No, because crazy sells.
I mean, crazy sells. What a smart ass he is.
Huh? Look, I admit it. There's every possibility in the world that when 7 a.m. Eastern damn daylight time rolls around tomorrow, I'm going to be right there tuned into squinting the meat puppet to see, because I'm guilty too.
Me too. I know. Me too. It's like watching a wreck. But you know, he's not even that rich. He didn't earn half of the money that he's got. He's just a cheap label with some hedge funds hung on some buildings. He doesn't own most of the buildings that bear his name. He's just a title with a white last name. He's white. He's got blonde hair. and some rich businessmen chose him to be the label. You know, he's not nearly as rich as the Walmart family or the Koch brothers. And he talks like he's just a smart ass. He's a smart aleck guy, that's getting a lot of airtime. I wouldn't read one of his books, because none of them are written by any of the people that, and I did see, by the way, the gentleman Coates, he was on Democracy Now! Yesterday, and I think he was actually, Bob, he may have been on, Good Morning Joe with Mika Brzezinski this morning. I think Coates may have been. I think he was. But I do want to read that book. There's a lot of books I want to read still. But anyway, I thank you for letting me ramble on with some of my life stories. I've been fighting this struggle, this battle of civil rights, human rights, equal rights, justice rights.
I appreciate it. You haven't rambled. This is what Conversation Radio is supposed to sound like, Mark, and you've contributed mightily to the program this evening, and I do appreciate it. You have yourself a good evening,
friend. I thank you for being there every night. You're listened to by me from many corners of the earth. I've been all over the country in the last year, from Arkansas to the state of Washington to New Hampshire, and I'm listening to you quite often, and I'm glad you're doing better, and I miss Jim's voice calling in, and miss Sandra, miss everybody, your buddy from Wisconsin. All the people that call, I respect the man in Texas with his husband that he can now marry legally. I'm glad our country's moving forward. And
even if it does so by fits and starts and haltingly at best, yeah, I understand
right,
completely.
And how interesting the Republicans took down the Confederate flag. I just find that
they kind of had to because the money told them to. The money told them to, and they listened to the money.
They don't
listen to morals. They don't listen to ethics. They don't listen to the common courtesy. But they will, by God, listen to money. They'll listen to Boeing. They'll listen to Volvo. They'll listen to, you know, exactly. Hey, Mark, I got to get out of here because we're very, very much up against it. You have a good night.
All right. Good night, Bobby.
Bye now. Our buddy Mark calling from points unknown. He does get around. And so we come to the end of the program, and we have been by fits and starts this evening by virtue of server problems that began to devil us at around, 20, 30 minutes ago. But I hope you've enjoyed the program and the conversation as much as I have enjoyed helping to create it alongside Jim and alongside Mark. Back tomorrow for Friday on the Front Porch. And I regret to say that this is going to be one of the more challenging weeks we've faced. We had no takers for Chris's $100 challenge. And so tomorrow evening, we're going to find ourselves in as deep a hole as we have lately been in, and maybe in this entire year. I'm not sure. But we're going to be trying to raise $660 before the end of the program tomorrow evening. That's tough, and I admit it. But thank you, one and all, who have contributed and do help make this program available for anyone who wants to hear it. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. And, of course, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.